You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
User joined your channel. User left your channel. User joined your channel.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Kay Ham, and you are listening to the Fakeologist Audio. It's October 5th, 2015. I'm testing a new mic today. I'm not sure how well it's going to mic one. I'm a bit frustrated. Yeah, my cat likes to chew headphones, but it wasn't working that well anyway. It was time to get rid of it, so I'm testing this one, see how the upgrade works. Also, I wanted to point out Tom Dalpra posted a link in the audio chat sometime October 3rd. It's at Apple.com. Every moon photo shot by Apollo astronauts is now on Flickr. So if you want to have some fun hating on NASA, this is pretty fun thing to do. So what I did is I just kept taking each picture as it came. Let's take the very first one we see. There's a link in the chat from October 3rd if you want to do this with me at fakeologist.com. If we save, just let's take the first image. Save image as moon guy, because they have these really weird names. Save to desktop. What I'd like to do is drop it into photo forensics and see what that looks like linked on my desktop. Kind of fun. Kind of fun. So far, every picture I looked at has major editing issues. So they're not strictly from the moon. If what I did is I'm not sure who this is. Let's go look. See that Google every moon photo on Flickr. The first one, they're not naming the photos. I guess I have to go to Flickr. But this article says every moon photo shot by Apollo astronauts is now on Flickr. Want to browse the entire collection of photos captured on the moon by Apollo astronauts mounted Hasselblad cameras? You can now do so right on Flickr. The Project Apollo Archive, that's the name of it, the Project Apollo Archive, has uploaded over 8,400 high-res scans of photos shot by Apollo astronaut trips. Nice find, Tom. Nice find. This is awesome. Let's finish the scan of photos. The images are unprocessed version. There you go. You just said there's chunks everywhere. There's big giant squares where really used Photoshop tools. If you notice, when you smudge and blur and things like that in Photoshop, they don't come in circles. They actually come in big squares. So if you do photo forensics, you can see where all these changes have been made. They darkened this astronaut's shadow on the moon. They cleared a bunch of fuzziness around the astronaut in the moon background. There's tons of changes. Tons. Just drop it into photo forensics. See what I'm talking about. The images are unprocessed versions of original NASA scans. It's a huge treasure trove of photos that include both iconic images and blurry outtakes. Oh, for the first time we get them blurry outtakes. All grouped into the film magazines they were exposed in. Mm-hmm. So it says they're all grouped. Not grouped in the film magazine. So if it was from a roll of film, is that what they're trying to say? And that's how they're grouped? Archive founder Kip Teague tells the Planetary Society that every single photo taken on the lunar surface is in the collection, as are numerous Hasselblad photos taken during the journeys there and back. So we'll get a snap of the spaceship. Is that what we're talking about? Having some fun there in the cabin. Just giggling and snapping selfies of each other. Are they still mounted on their chest when they're in the cabin? Do they still have those chests? Is there like a cabin chest carrier for that? Or do they have to awkwardly just sort of grab it around their hands? Like one holds it and then the other pushes the button. Because if you imagine the Hasselblad, it's not mounted on your chest. then you have to sort of cradle it in your arms, I guess, to keep anyone else can push the button. I don't know how that works. Scrolling through the photo stream feels like you're flipping through someone's entire set of vacation photos. Except in this case, the trip was to the moon. Here are some photos we came across while exploring the archive. And there's one of the underside of the lander, I guess, as it's taken off. There's some earth corners. There's some fuzzy ones on the moon. So looking down on the moon's surface. Boy, I really wanted those moon pictures to be true. I really, really, really did. Well, now here's one of the moon. It's at the link Tom sent us at petapixel.com. It's doing the Flickr archive. And you know, it looks almost exactly like the picture I took of the moon the other night with my Nikon 42X. It has no more resolution. You could take that from Earth, dude, like I did. That looks exactly like my picture that I took when we had the lunar eclipse. So I'm calling bullshit on that one. Oh, we got a big, huge crater. Bunch of weird ones we've not seen before. What strange images. Hey, I have a question. The lunar eclipse. If we could see the moon so easy from Earth, why is it a big deal when the astronaut take it in space and it's almost the same picture as I took? You could zoom in too. I have a telescope. I zoomed in pretty far. Looks like pretty much all of the astronaut ones. Oh, there's a nice one here of the side view of the Hasselblad camera as it's mounted on an astronaut's chest as he's walking next to a big rock outcropping. There's no way in hell they're going to be able to, from the moon visor, the helmet, the moon helmet they had to wear, they can't even look down to see the camera. They have to feel it to know what's on their chest. They can't look at their shoes unless they kick their feet way out to see their toesies because they just can't look down. And now that camera's in the way of whatever view they had of the floor. There's some pictures of guys inside, astronauts inside the astronaut little cabin there with like undershirt on and stuff and their chest. That's interesting. You got a little umbrella like ET. There's a picture of this little ET umbrella beaming info back to the Earth. Right, right. You're going to believe that. We also have a curve of the moon. It's pretty curvy. And in the same shot, we see the moon, the Earth, an astronaut, the back wheel of the dune buggy, and the umbrella-like antenna facing Earth. I doubt that's real. I doubt it is real. The funny thing is, none of it's real. It's all made on Earth. You know, I think. Because I don't think we can get space. No, I don't think we can. I don't think rockets work in space. Rockets need something to push off of. If you look, what was that? There's a balloon cart. So there's a couple videos where guys are making balloons and then they're not letting the balloon, they're not letting it back. They're putting like a tape and a piece of paper back there to divert the air and the balloon's not shooting off. It's not moving. So even balloons have to push off on something to move forward. A balloon, you fill it up, has to have air to push off of to move forward. So if a balloon needs air, and look how light it is, clearly a rocket needs air as well. So try it yourself. Take a balloon, fill it up, and tape a piece of paper in front of the end of the balloon where the air would blow. So it's blowing, but it's not going straight back. It's diverting to the side. Your balloon won't fly anywhere. It'll just sort of drop to the ground. If you want to make a balloon shoot across the room where the air is coming out of the balloon end, the opening that you just blew air into, if that's not free for the airstream to shoot back, then the balloon won't propel forward. Try it. Do the balloon experiment. Tell NASA you're full of shit. I just proved it myself, NASA. All right. So I encourage all of you to go to this Flickr. Every moon photo shot by Apollo astronaut is now on Flickr. Go check that out. Pick any image. If you land on it with your cursor, save image as. The name of this file is 21039601443_small a68e85f14_z. I wonder if that has a naming system. I'll look at that later, but I'm just going to call it Moon 2 because I already did Moon 1. If we save it, drop it into photo forensics, and then look at the chunking all around. You're going to find almost, so far I've checked five, they all have major problems. Well, all of them, not one is untouched. Wow. Wow. Not one. It's going to be so much fun. You're going to confirm over and over and over again that there are serious problems with the moon mission. Because if these moon pictures are real, why do you have to alter them? Let's read the article one more time. That Tom Dalbra. Good find, Tom. You find the most awesome stuff. I love it. Let's take a look again at the introduction. Scrolling. There's a lot of pictures to look at. I don't think they put all 8,500 in this article, but the images are unprocessed versions of the original NASA scans. Well, if that's true, then NASA are the people then that are changing these, not Flickr. So NASA, why you have to change these photos and pretend like they're for realsies? Why you gotta lie, NASA? That's what I want to know. So I haven't, it is an original. They all show signs of severe manipulation. Severe digital manipulation. All right. This has been Kham at fakeologist.com. It's October 5th, 2015. Go take a look at these NASA photos, people. It's just going to make you feel good. Like you're not going crazy. Like these are all made up. These are all highly edited photos that NASA put there on Twitter. All right. It's a good day. It's sunny out. Just a few chemtrails in the sky. All right. Find mojo here. I stayed home today because I had a doctor appointment. I was like, yay, it's in the daytime. I wonder if mojo's on, because I know in England you have different hours. You cross a continent, you cross the globe there. So I would love to chat with you sometime, mojo. Sounds like you got a lot of neat things to say. So drop me a line or something. Tell me when you're free. Just throw it in the fake. I'll just chat. What are some good times to catch mojo? I would love to talk with you. You sound very intelligent. And you and I could have a fun conversation. And you know what? Yeah. Sorry, Mojo. It's the nature of these chats. If you're in a room with a bunch of boys, you're not going to talk about what you want. No, they kind of hog the conversation, but it's okay. Because you and me can talk. And I became real good friends with Vidir. Her and I have amazing conversations. She's a smart lady also. I really enjoyed chatting with her. But sometimes a lady just needs to talk to a lady is what I'm getting at. All right, Mojo, so hit me up. I would love to chat with you. And same with Babette. I remember Babette when I was doing a Kham radio show. It's when I first got introduced to you. Ab had met you, and he was real excited to get you on air, and you were excited to come on air, and you were waiting in the wings. And, you know, I apologize. I wish I could have fit you in that night, but I already had a guest, and I didn't want to be rude to the guest because the guest was right in the middle of stuff. So I know you wanted to be on the air before, Babette. So, yeah, come chat with me too. Because now I'm not so big. Now that I'm not doing Kham Radio, got a little bit free more time. So hit me up too, Babette. I know you wanted to chat with me before on air. So let's make that happen. All right. And you too, Mojo. Let's chat. Let's have a ladies' night. Ladies' fakeologist night. I'll wear something sexy and, you know, we can just have fun. Pour our drinks and just be late as night. Woo! Anyway, take care, everybody. This has been Kham, October 5th, 2015 at fakeologist.com, my favorite place to go. Well, and then there's Clues Forum. I love that too. And then there's Chris from Hoaxbusters. That's my fave also. I got three big faves. So I recommend these if you want to get some super good, solid information from the most amazing thinkers of our day. Clues Forum and Hoaxbusterscall.blogspot.com with Chris Kendall. Chris Kendall and his new friend, John. I really enjoy John Adams. Listening to John too. He's also an amazing thinker. That's about it though. Of the places to go for rock solid information. That's where you would go. So there you go. Have a great day, everybody.
User disconnected from your channel. User joined your channel. User left 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 your channel. User joined your channel. User joined your channel.
How you doing? Can you hear me, Geo?
I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me?
can hear everybody's got voice. Welcome, everybody. I guess I'll do the openings. This is Cam here with Geofree, and he has some interesting news about Chernobyl.
Oh, yeah. How's everyone doing? I just stumbled across this. I have my ficologist goggles on, glasses. I guess you would call them goggles because you don't really have a peripheral view. It's more of a focused view. So, this is an independent article. I'll put in the link right here in the chat. And it pretty much says, hold on, let me get the whole article title.
This is hysterical because remember, Chernobyl was supposed to be all dead, and because of horrible nuclear radiation that released from the Russian nuclear power plant. By the way, it's on an isolated nuclear power plant.
Oh, it's isolated?
Yeah, it's on a military base.
Okay, all right, here's the full title. Chernobyl, disaster exclusion zone around plant has become wildlife haven on par with natural nature reserves. Looks like they got buffalo roaming.
What happened to the radiation, I think?
Yeah, that's the first thing I'm thinking about. In my perception, I've always thought Chernobyl was that was a real grounding fact in my perception because you didn't hear much about it and it was like USSR, you know, exclusion zone, no media, and then the USSR fell and then there really hasn't been much about it. And now knowing about how life is, you know, flourishing in these zones that are not, manned, there's no man to fucking kill all these animals. And they're flourishing. It's crazy. It's like Hiroshima. It's like Nagasaki. It's like, what happened?
Right. Where's all the three-headed buffalo from the radiation?
Yeah, exactly. Like these buffalo on this independent, I'll link it up real quick, but these buffalo, they look happy. And it's like buffalo in Chernobyl.
My brother was really into when Chernobyl. He's like into all these, whatever happens that makes the world end, he's really into it. So he's been prepping for like ever, even though he doesn't have much money, but what money he does, he's really good with. So Chernobyl though, I'm getting off the track a little bit. He kept telling me about it. Oh, in Chernobyl, you can't use any of the milk because it's all coming out radiated. Oh, don't get Russian cheese because, you know, you're going to get, it's radioactive, the Russian cheese. So he was real worried about it, and he was keeping me updated. And, you know, you hear him tell it was like a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
What year exactly was that? That was early 80s, right? 83?
Well, I guess I could guess, or I could just, yeah, let's Google that.
I Googled it real quick. It says 86.
Chernobyl.
Yeah. 26th of April, 1986.
Chernobyl.
So, since that time, it's like...
There's a Chernobyl energy drink. That's pretty sweet. I just got a screen computer. I'm so excited.
Do you have an ad blocker on?
Acer. It's so much fun.
Do you have an ad blocker?
Chernobyl. Yeah, 1986. April 26th.
Yeah, it's just so interesting to see these places
it
that you
so
thought.
So bad, say, classified as a level 7. Ooh, 7, wow, seven. That's crazy bad.
Yeah, 7 on what kind of scale?
Classified as a level
7. You're breaking up a little bit, Kayham.
The highest maximum classification for a disaster. But now it's a wildlife refuge.
Yeah. And then Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you know, those places don't even look like they ever got hit by anything.
Let's see what other animals are living up there. Well, this is just hysterical. If you just Google Chernobyl wildlife, one of the articles, 28 years later of Chernobyl have reclaimed their home at a price. So in one, they're holding these little red and black bugs. That's what earned.
All right, here's a quote from the independent website. It says, quote, This is from Professor Jim Smith of Portsmouth University. Quote, "This doesn't mean radiation is good for wildlife, just that effects of human habitation, including hunting, farming, and forestry, are a lot worse." End quote. Ugh, garbage. Such garbage. Human beings are the trash of this earth. Oh. Oh my gosh, it also goes on to say, "The scientists found no evidence to support earlier studies suggesting that wildlife in the region had suffered from the radiation released after the Chernobyl accident of 1986, which sent plumes of radiation emissions across much of northern Europe, causing radiation
hotspots within the exclusion zone." This article in the Geiger Counter around Chernobyl and still showing how active the radiation is. The Geiger counters.
Oh, yeah, but how does a Geiger counter work? How does that work? Like, this whole article, I wish I read it before. Like, I just came on here because I saw it and I was like, this is just bullshit. But just reading through it, it's just like, it's even worse than I thought. All right, here's another quote. "These results demonstrate for the first time that, regardless of potential radiation effects on individual animals, the Chernobyl exclusion zone supports an abundant mammal community after nearly three decades of chronic radiation exposure," end quote. The researchers write in their study published in the journal Current Biology.
In this one video, there are spider webs with water mist so that they show up for the photographs. And then they're taking, and I'm going to let you hear the Geiger counter reading. Oh, so they're telling you it's dangerous, but all the animals are, but wait, there's radiation and it's dangerous.
But you know, the biggest fear porn they are selling the cattle, the goyim, the common people is all about, you know, Syria. Yeah. And Russia, oh, it's terrible.
And you know what they never tell you? They never tell you it was on a military installation. They never tell you that. And it was a highly controlled situation. They never, I've not heard that yet in any of these.
On what?
Any of these shows.
Well, Kahim, I have to go. It's almost 1:30 and I have to get up in 5 hours. So have a good night.
User disconnected from your channel.
So I'm going to play a little more audio from this video later. The animals of Chernobyl have reclaimed their homeland at a price. And GeoFree put me onto this article. Maybe not this one, but another one of like animals are back in Chernobyl. But how could they be if there's this horrible disaster there? So first, let's listen to this audio.
But for more than a decade, Timothy Mousseau, a scientist, has conducted an extensive biological survey in his studies.
Well, the first question is, how does Timothy military base? Dude walking on, it's not just a city, it's a military installation. So it's a security clearances, whether abandoned or not. How do I know? I know someone who has a security clearance who works for a major airplane manufacturer company who has to go on military bases. And this person says there's tons of security clearances to get, even when you already have a security clearance with your own company, to go on other people's military bases is a huge, easy thing to do. You have to red tape. You have to be sponsored by people. So who asked this dude to go to Chernobyl and to do these studies on the animals there? That's my point. All right, let's listen to just a little bit more of that audio.
An extensive biological survey here, and his studies have shown that life has been far more slow to recover than previously believed.
Isn't that interesting? Even though it's supposed to be like article because life's coming back, they still, that noise, that music in the background is really tense. It really makes you feel like nervous, like something bad's going to happen. Kind of like the strategy of tension.
It's a perfect area for biological studies because we see a diversity of plants and animals. It's one of the hotter areas in the Chernobyl zone. And so from our previous work, we know that this level of chronic exposure is above that most species will tolerate.
trapping little field mice, and they're catching them and looking at them.
This year we've been looking at the small rodents, spiders. Earlier this year we were here working with the birds. We found that the abundance of many species of birds are depressed in these areas of high contamination, leading to an overall decrease in the biodiversity.
Birds are depressed. Do they mean the population is depressed as in lowered? Or do they mean they have mental health issues? I'm not quite sure what they mean.
On the order of 50% fewer species.
And you hear the dumb Geiger counter going off in the back. Like Geiger, please, like that means anything. Geiger counters, they're not that complicated of an instrument. I've explained it before, but if, you know, just go to Wikipedia. Look how they're made. They're a tube of some sort of gas. Let's look and see what kind of gas is in a Geiger counter glass vacuum tube. It's really hard to find out what, if you're trying to figure out what a Geiger counter is, they try and confuse you at first. So here's the first sentence in the wiki of Geiger counter. The Geiger counter is an instrument used for measuring ionizing radiation, used widely in such applications as radiation dosimetry, radiological protection, experimental physics, and the nuclear it radiation such particles, beta particles, and gamma rays using the ionization effect produced in a Geiger-Müller tube, which gives its name to the instrument. In a wide and prominent use as a handheld radiation survey instrument, it is perhaps one of the world's best-known radiation detection instruments. Well, that sounds fine and everything and real complicated and science-y, but if you look counter, the Geiger-Müller tube is filled with an inert gas such as helium, neon, or argon at low pressure. High voltage is applied. The tube briefly conducts electrical charge when a particle or photon of incident radiation gas conductive by ionization. Well, here's the problem with that. There's lots of things that could make that gas conductive. So you have the gas in the tube, and when different photons pass through the tube, it's electrical charge, which makes the, and so the Geiger counter is like your bathroom scale, the 0 to 1. You could set it to 5 pounds above your weight, or weight, and a Geiger counter to above the current level of radiation in the background, and you can set it below the current value of radiation. Geiger, if you set it really low, what low or high? Had one, and I used to mess around with it all day. So that it's picking up everything, that it's constantly beeping, and it won't play a trick on my audience. I could take this Geiger counter, I could set it to really high sensitivity, and it would just be beeping. I would just say, look, it's beeping, there's going down, radiation and stuff going to kill y'all. And in fact, I just set it real high. The sensitivity, ion's going through it anyway, all the time. How could I turn it way sensitive and have it beep, but not beep at all. So there's stuff happening. I guess it's going, what ionizing gas, what's hitting that ionizing gas? We don't know what it exactly. Is it all the complicated stuff they're saying? You know, what's making it beep? Is it alpha particles? Is it beta particles? Is it gamma rays? Look at all the things. They, even in the wiki, they say all the things your Geiger can detect. Which one of these is nuclear fallout or nuclear radiation, who knows? The whole bunch of other things it detects that I had read in an article that's not in this wiki also. So you really don't know what you're detecting when you got your Geiger counter out. But you know what? It's a great, it's a wonderful, I could take this guy to any city, turn it to really high sensitivity, beeping, and I could pretend there's just a nuclear accident in the area, and it would look like I was telling the truth. Because look, Geiger counters beep on TV or on videos when experts pull out a greater than the neighboring radiation. You have to spend how much? Let's see how much. If I wanted a Geiger counter that would tell me how much radiation is in the area, let's see how much that cost.
User in your channel timed out. User joined your channel.
I'm looking online at counters. And handheld digital display Geiger counters run about $400 to about $650. $650 U.S. dollars. Handheld. They're little yellow things, and you just, you know, turn it on and set the background radiation level, and it has a digital display. In the video I was just watching, he had a handheld Geiger counter, so it shouldn't have been making those clicks. So they put the clicks in for sound effects, because I guess we're all used to those old-fashioned Geiger counters with the click, click, click. They don't have those. Those are the old-fashioned ones. The newer ones are the handheld models with the digital display. You can still buy the click, click ones. They're kind of fun. Some have a wand with them, so you wave the wand over the thing. But I read reviews on the wand. It's just basically a scam. It's a gadget you pay a couple $100 for, and it doesn't do anything extra. Doesn't really help focus the background radiation at all, because the tube is inside the main unit. Well, it's kind of a scam right there. Now for them do-it-yourself people, you have a DIY Geiger counter kit. You can do it yourself. A nuclear radiation detection kit, microcontroller, and PC ready. How much does that cost? That's pretty cool. All it looks like is like a little board type of thing, and then you can hook a 9-volt battery to it, and then it has a sensor. Not telling me how much it is, though. I think if we all get Geiger counters, we can show how smart we all are. All right. The starting price for this tube goes from about $120 to $170. So first you get tube, $150. Inert gas tube, that is the basis of the Geiger counter. Let's go back, talk about that one more time. Helium, or argon at low pressure. That is, you have a glass tube under low pressure with helium, neon, or argon in it. A high voltage is applied to this tube so that it will an electrical charge when a particle or photon hits the gas inside the tube. So it goes through the glass into the gas, hits the gas, makes a charge, and you hear a beep or a digital display moves because an electrical charge is made. So all the guts for neon, we could say, is neon. So think about how ridiculous that is. Dude with neons running around a forest waiting for some beeps, and then they're trying to tell you what those beeps mean. I guess what I play this little game, I read news stories, I think. How easy would it be for a scientist running around a forest around Chernobyl to fake that there's radiation everywhere? All he would need is a gear counter set to high sensitivity. He could make that thing beep all over the place. He also collected a bunch of birds, and he has pictures of birds with tumors on them. Well, that might be. Birds might be having tumors. He could also got those pictures from anywhere. And just, you know, said, I took him at Chernobyl. Guess the fact that he has some major security clearance to get onto a military base in the first place is a little suspicious. And if he's not disclosing that information in the interview, chances are he's probably not for realsies. And he's making up a bunch of information to pretend a nuclear accident happened. Maybe. I don't know. I'm just supposing. I'm just saying, how easy would it be to fabricate the entire story? In this case, seems like it'd be pretty easy, actually. Radiation is sketchy at best. I'm sure rocks probably emit some weird thing. Just like quartz, if you use crystal, it produces a pulse. So rocks do weird stuff, yeah. Does it mean they make huge bombs? Well, I don't know. I was talking with another teacher at work. He seems to be slightly conspiracy-minded, so I'm testing him out on a few ideas. And I asked him about Chernobyl. If it was really a nuclear accident, how could all the animals be returning, and how could the wildlife refuge not be producing three-headed bison and things like that? He had an interesting response, and I thought, I should probably look this up. He said that radiation is heavy. So works its way down into the ground, and scientists didn't realize that radiation was so heavy. And that's why Chernobyl is mostly clean now, because you see all that radiation that landed on everything, it just kept dropping because, you know, radiation is heavy. This is what the teacher was telling me. And so it's just kind of working its way down and through the soil because it's so heavy, those heavy molecules, like lead heavy, and just slowly working its way down into the soil till it's just sucking down into the Earth's core. And then it just gets mixed up with the lava and stuff inside the Earth's core. So I thought, is that real science? Is that, his name is Sam. I'm like, you making that up, Sam? That sounds like you're making that up, Sam.
User in your channel timed out. User joined your channel.
Here's something that kind of confuses me. An article cleans up radiation zone, and it's dated 3/5/12 in Fukuoka, Japan, at frozen ground, scraping until they've removed the top inches of radioactive from the yard of a single home. Total amount of waste gathered, roughly 60 tons. One down, tens of thousands to go, and since wind and rain spread radiation easily, even this yard may need to be dug up again. The work is part of a monumental task, a costly and uncertain effort by Japan to try and make radiation-contaminated communities inhabitable again. Some contractors are experimenting with chemicals. Others stick to shovels and high-pressure water. One government expert says, it's mostly trial and error. So they're just, and they show a and a on from Star Wars. It's all white. He's just digging like soil around shrubbery, putting it in a bucket with his hands. And ice in the garden of a private home. So they got to get rid of it. It's really bad. So they're just scooping it up, soil with their hands, with radiation. And by the way, I did try and look to see what my coworker Sam was telling me about how radiation in soil is heavy and it just works its way down. I'm thinking he's just listening to some weird websites and stuff because I couldn't find it anywhere. So he's listening to some nonsense on the internet. Now I'm at another webpage. It's called Nuclear News, nuclear-news.net. The news that matters about the nuclear industry. Let's see. Critical problem of Fukushima nuclear reactor number 2. Where is the molten core? Long-lived radionuclides such as cesium-137 are something new to us as a species. They did not exist on Earth in any appreciable quantities during the entire evolution of complex life. So this article is telling us how bad the nuclear radiation is. Although they are invisible to our senses, they are millions of times more poisonous than most of the common poisons we are familiar with. They cause cancer, leukemia, genetic mutations, birth defects, malformations, and abortions at concentrations almost below human recognition and comprehension. They are lethal at the atomic or molecular level. Did those Japanese workers know that? Who's digging it up with their hands and just scooping it in 5-gallon buckets? Are they aware that this radiation is lethal at the atomic or molecular level? Are they aware of that? Why are they letting them scoop it up with their hands then? I'm kind of curious. If this doesn't scream of the strategy attention, holy cow. They're just trying to make people feel as bad as they can, as scared as they can. All right, let's continue this article that's trying to scare the shit out of you about nuclear radiation. The title of this section is called Fukushima, the World's Never Seen Anything Like This. Popular Resistance by Robert Hunziker at www.counterpunch.org, October 2nd, 2015. The Fukushima Daiichi Nuclear Power Plant No. 2 nuclear reactor fuel is missing from the core containment vessel. Where did it go? Nobody knows. Not only that, but the learning curve for a nuclear meltdown is as fresh as the event itself because the world has never seen anything like this. Never. Well, they already said that before. They're kind of repeating themselves here in this article. Utilizing cosmic ray muon radiography with nuclear emulsion, researchers from Nagoya University peered inside the reactor at Fukushima. The nuclear fuel in reactor core number 5 was clearly visible via the muon process. However, at number 2 reactor, which released a very large amount of radioactive substances coincident with the 2001 explosion, little if any signs of nuclear fuel appear in the containment vessel. A serious meltdown is underway. So, you know, I don't know if you guys, you're too young to know this, but a nuclear meltdown is when the core, the hottest part, the most nuclear part of a nuclear power plant, it's when it gets so hot, it just melts right down to the earth. It just melts all the rocks, and it's just going down and down and down. And what they suppose would happen is once that nuclear core hits the earth core, we're done, man. We're dead. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and there's a lot of fear-mongering about one day having a core meltdown. And that means the end of the earth. A core meltdown meant everyone's dead, because once that nuclear core hits the earth's core, we're all just going to die and explode in a horrible, fiery nuclear explosion mess. But it hasn't happened yet, you see. But they're hinting at it here, that it could be down there. Where did it go? Nobody knows. It's all just bullshit. Let's see. The researchers say further analysis are needed to determine whether molten fuel penetrated the reactor and fell down. In short, researchers do not yet know if the molten hot stuff has penetrated the steel concrete based beyond the containment vessel, thus entering Mother Earth. Oh, this is not even scientific. Who writes this shit? This is supposed to be a science site. No, it's not. They even have former nuclear engineers discussing Fukushima. The strategy attention, straight up strategy attention. That's all that this is. Let's finish reading this funky article called at nuclear-news.net. The news that matters about the nuclear industry. Well, this isn't about industry, is it? I guess so. The Nagoya University research team, in coordination with Toshiba Corporation, reported their findings at a meeting of the Physical Society of Japan on September 26th. Thus, therefore, and furthermore, it is advisable to review what's at stake. There's a lot of wasted words in this. Thus, therefore, and furthermore. All right. High-level nuclear waste is almost unimaginably poisonous. Take, for example, cesium-137 with a half-life of 30 years, which makes up the largest fraction of the long-lived radionuclides residing in spent nuclear fuel. 1 gram of radioactive cesium-137, about the size of a dime, contains 88 curies of radioactivity. 104 curies of radioactive cesium-137 spread evenly over 1 square mile of land will make it uninhabitable for more than a century. Comments on draft of Nuclear Waste Administration Act of 2013. Positions for Social Responsibility, May 23rd, 2013. Oh, so people are, maybe they're reprinting. This is a terrible article. They're just putting a bunch of scary stuff in one article and not really citing where it's coming from. Clearly, this is cited from another article. As an example, there are 1,090 square miles of land surrounding the destroyed Chernobyl reactor that Ukraine classifies as an uninhabitable radioactive exclusion zone, because radioactive fallout left more than 104 curies of cesium. Well, let's wait there. Now let's go back. About the size of a dime contains 88 curies. Now, 104 curies is about 88, you could say, spread over 1 square mile. It's too much for you to live on. It's devastating. You'll just be dead in a minute. You'll just completely waste away with radioactive poisoning if you go on a land that's a mile wide with 104 curies of radioactive cesium on it, which was about the fallout of Chernobyl's. That's what they're saying. All right, we haven't got to the worst of this yet. Ready? So this is the article, Critical Problem of Fukushima Nuclear Reactor Number 2. Where's the molten core? Nobody knows. So this is the last sentence of this article. Here's the big, or rather biggest, problem. Cesium is water-soluble and makes its way into soils and waters as it quickly becomes ubiquitous in a contaminated ecosystem. So not only does this article tell us we have to be afraid of a nuclear meltdown where the molten nuclear core of a reactor is heading down to the Earth's core and thus going to kill us all by exploding the Earth, now we also have to be worried that the water life source of Mother Earth is going to be contaminated by cesium-137. all that stuff's getting, this article's telling us, sucked into the stone, gonna contaminate our water. Strategy attention, folks. Strategy attention. That's all that is. One last thing on bombs before I say goodbye. It's me and my friend Sam, we were talking about the nuclear explosions at the Bikini Atoll. Bikini Island, they were super famous for some of the first nuclear bombs going off. Sam was telling me a bomb went off there. And I said, can you prove it? Because there are reports of people bringing in barges with a bunch of TNT on it and exploding it. So how would you know the difference between a TNT explosion, by the way, if that story is even true, and then a nuclear bomb explosion? If it can be repeated using contemporary science, and we don't need anything special or anything amazing, why do we need nuclear bombs at all if conventional explosives can do the same thing? Well, Sam says to me, I know they did the bomb at Bikini Atoll, because if you go look at the island now, it's just a ring. There's just a ring there, it says to me. He says, Kay, there ain't no island. There's just a ring now. Clearly a bomb hit it. Well, I says, Sam, understand what the word atoll means. Go to the dictionary to read what an atoll is. A-T-O-L-L. Atoll. A ring-shaped reef, island, or chain of islands formed of coral. Atoll is by its very nature a ring. It has no middle. It's not an island. It's a ring of coral that slowly, as it grew bigger and bigger, bigger rings in the ocean that looked like it might have been an island. Let's finish reading about what an atoll is, and that even before the nuclear bomb went off on the atoll, it was already just a circle ring with no interior of the island. It was just water. After the bomb went off, it didn't change much. It didn't change at all. I saw some pictures. I should dig those up of the Bikini Atoll before the A-bomb test and after. Back shape. But let's look how atolls are made. The coral of the atoll often sits atop the rim of an extinct seamount or volcano, which has eroded or subsided partially beneath the water. The lagoon forms over the volcanic crater or caldera, while the higher rim remains above water or at shallow depths that permit the coral to grow and form reefs. For the atoll to persist, continued erosion of subsidence must be at a rate slow enough to permit growth upwards and outward place the lost height. So we'll see. I'll begin with Sam. He's kind of like, he's not quite Alex Jones, but he reads a lot and he has a good input. The whole idea with fakeology subjects with non-fakeologists is you really risk ruining the relationship. And I noticed the whole flat earth community, I'm going to throw this out there before I say goodnight, encourages people, which I found, which is exactly what it would do. Flat earth fake science community, research community is encouraging people to go out there and talk about it. Notice that. You need to go out and we're busting this wide open. People, you're not busting anything wide open. You go out and tell people, they're going to think you're a fool. They're not going to think you're busting anything. Who's talking about flat earth? Nobody. You know how I know? Because I'm in education. And I see all facets of education. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody. And I keep up on science, too. I'm up on what's going on in science because we have damn TED Talks all the time and everything else. How many other science things do we do? I can tell you, I've heard nobody talking about the flat earth. Absolutely not. It absolutely doesn't come. Not one. So when these dudes are telling people you need to talk about the flat earth, you need to tell people what's going on. We're busting it wide open, busting anything open. Your echo chamber, you're still, it's not happening. This is part of the doing of discredit by association campaign. You will be discredited yourself personally if you talk about flat earth with anyone that's not a geologist. If anyone is encouraging you to out as a fake, doubt them. First of all, why are you telling me what to do? Worry about yourself. How's that? Number one, I'm suspicious right away, you people stuff. I don't think so. Anyone that encourages me, highly suspicious. I people ask for them and other nonsense things like, what are you talking about? We want me to do total shills. Any ecologists out there, including PK, including anybody else, surfer, if any other research for them, even can you do it? Asking you, this is dumb. Tell them to do it themselves. Be a grown up and do your own research, people. So, the weird thing I noticed, I really didn't hear skull bug. I never heard, but I'm here for serious. All right, fakeologists, you be safe out there. But there isn't anything to worry about anyway. There's almost nothing to worry about. Just be nice to your neighbor. That'll fix a lot of things if we're just nice to our neighbors and we support each other in our communities. And Geofree, who started this amazing conversation, I will catch up with you later and we will talk some more. And Mojo, girl, we have to get together and chat it up. I look forward to meeting you and chatting with you. Mojo, I would love you to meet Vadir. We got to get you and me and Vadir all chatting it up. We would have an amazing conversation. And hopefully we'll do it in the live stream so that everyone can share it instead of spending 5 hours in the lobby. That's just stealing live stream away, man. You're just stealing live stream. That's all that is. You got to go in the live stream and let everyone hear it and share. This is Kay. It's October 5th, 2015 on Fakeologist.com. Enjoy your day.
User disconnected from your channel.
Hi, this is Jeffrey, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.